Welcome, and now we're starting the next talk, or this is actually the 10th in a series of talks on women, men, and spiritual and sexuality in Krishna consciousness. And one thing I wanted to let you know, if you've been attending these shows from the very beginning, for about the first 5 weeks, we read an article, and I didn't know who wrote it, and I found out 2 days ago who wrote it, and that is Irmala Devi Dasi wrote that article, that wonderful article on understanding all the things that Prabhupada says about women that are troublesome for many of us, or can be troublesome for many people. And it's a wonderful article. I don't know if it's available for you anywhere, but it's called Women's Spiritual Nature. It may be on Dandavats if you want to check it out. And then we had been reading an article by Bhaktivedya Purnaswamy about the way a man's mind works and the way a woman's mind works. And he was describing how female minds work both with the left and right brain, and the male mind works either discreetly with the right brain or the left brain, and therefore they're more capable in doing and performing different activities and doing different things, particularly the woman being better with the children. They're more naturally suited to domestic activities. So, now, I think something that we didn't cover that's important is just in describing the word intelligence. Like, we often use this word intelligence, and like we were just talking recently about assumptions. So when I say the word intelligence, you may assume something. How do you define intelligence? You make an assumption of what you believe is intelligent and what is unintelligent. And then we come to the statements of women are less intelligent, and now you have to apply what you mean by intelligence, and then sometimes that doesn't apply to the women that you have worked with in your life, or your mother or your sister or your aunt. You don't see them that way. So then you become confused. So what does it mean in these cases where we say women are unintelligent or less intelligent than men, or maybe even sometimes unintelligent? I think it's usually less intelligent, but sometimes unintelligent is there also. So I once decided, let me get to the bottom of this, because there's been so much discussion on this topic in trying to understand the roles of men and women within our society, and what are women capable of doing, and is there anything they're not capable of doing? Are men more capable in certain areas? What are the advantages and disadvantages of being a man, being a woman? So I decided, I'm going to look, if you have the Veda base, you can search by a word. You could search everything Prabhupada has said based on one word or a group of words or a sentence. So I decided I'm going to research the word intelligence. And I made the assumption that in relation to intelligence, there's going to be a lot of things Prabhupada said about women. And I wanted to know, what did Prabhupada say? What did specifically he mean when he said women are less intelligent? So I searched intelligence, intelligent, less intelligent. Specifically, I searched less intelligent. And I thought, okay, if I search less intelligence, I'm going to come up with a lot of stuff about women. Guess what I came up with? Very interesting. Predominantly, I came up with statements in which Prabhupada said, those who don't surrender to Krishna are less intelligent. And he didn't really say much about women being less intelligent. It's very interesting. Because I think intuitively we understand, And we know that anyone who becomes a devotee, they're intelligent. They've understood that life has a higher purpose other than accumulating things and enjoying the physical body and dying in ignorance. And so anyone who comes to Krishna consciousness, be man, woman, black, white, red, yellow, young, old, they are intelligent. They have to have some advanced level of intelligence to understand the process of Krishna consciousness. What to speak of practice it and remain steady in it over the years. So then this kind of created some dilemma, because according to the assumptions that we may make about what is intelligent and isn't, how are we going to, how do we put women in this position of say, well, they're less intelligent than men. And I'm sure so many men have had the opportunity to work with women who are way more capable in certain areas than they were. And I want to give you an example. And the example is Fei Lo. Who is Fei Lo? Has anybody ever heard of Fei Lo? Have you heard of Fei Lo Ganagemya? Have you heard of Fei Lo Uddhava? Fei Lo was a Oriental girl, probably Chinese, born of Chinese parents, born in America. In my high school class, in my class on philosophy or socialism, and the teacher was Mr. Gambira, and Mr. Gambira was a revolutionary. He blew everyone's mind. He was totally out of the box. He didn't say anything that fit into the way normal people think. And Mr. Gambira would ask us difficult questions. And any question that Mr. Gambira would ask, Fei Lo would raise her hand and give the answer. And I would sit there and think, I don't know that answer. But Fei Lo knew all the answers. So that was one of my experiences, one of my strong experiences with women being intelligent, according to what I thought was intelligent, was being a good student, was Fei Lo, the Chinese student who knew all the answers. So I come to the, you know, and I had many experiences with women. There was another lady who was becoming a devotee at the same time I was becoming a devotee, and we were going to school in Berkeley. And I came to know that she was an honor student and basically straight-A student or 5.0 or close to it. And I was not a 5.0 student, so I came to understand this lady is very intelligent. 4.0, they don't have fives, 4.0. In those days, they didn't have numbers ahead. She was like basically straight A. And I was very impressed that this, you know. So, you know, all of us before coming to Krishna consciousness have these experiences. We were raised by mothers who were telling us what to do. And even as older men, we may go to our mothers for advice. And the grandmother gives advice and so on. And then we come to Krishna consciousness. And then we read, oh, women are less intelligent. They need to be protected. So like, what does that mean? And so I go through the folio, I read all these things, and then I come to this very interesting quote in which Prabhupada had a conversation, probably within his room, with a few people and one woman. And after they left, Prabhupada turned to his devotees and said, this woman is very intelligent. So now I'm like, okay, I thought maybe I could make sense out of this. And because we're so, well, women are less intelligent, but people who don't surrender to Krishna are less intelligent. Now Prabhupada's saying, this woman is very intelligent, and she's not even a devotee. And I know that Fei Lo was, you know, she was seemed to be a lot smarter than me. And this other girl who became a devotee, she was getting better grades than I was. And sometimes I'll read some of the articles written by women, and I'll think, my God, that woman's really smart. I can't even understand half the words in this article, and I couldn't write like that. And I'm like trying to put this together. So the point is that when we define intelligence as it's used in the Vedic conception, it's not used in the way we generally use it, as a woman not being smart, sharp, being capable, being able to do things that men can do. Now, traditionally, women weren't out in the workforce. They were at home taking care of kids, and they were happy with that because they had husbands who made enough money and who were providing whatever they needed, and they didn't feel the need that they had to do more, and they didn't feel the need they had to compete. Society changed. Women need to take care of themselves more. Sometimes you need two incomes. Everything's different. So we don't have this long history of women being out there in the world as scientists, philosophers, running corporations and so forth, because traditionally they didn't do that. But what they did is, you'll find, like Draupadi managed the whole kingdom for the Pandavas. She managed the finances and everything that was going on. And a lot of these princesses and queens had to manage the kingdom because often their husbands were out in battle. So everybody's gone fighting. They ran the show. So they were very qualified. And then you had these Brahmin women who were born in Brahmin families. And so if you say women are less intelligent than men, is it possible that a Brahmin woman is less intelligent than a Shudra man, because Shudras are described as being less intelligent, along with Vaishyas. So the whole thing gets really confusing. So how do we deal with this? Well, I want to read a paper. And it's about something we hear, a theme we hear again and again and again in the Bhagavatam, that women need to be protected. So by saying women need to be protected, it makes it sound like women are really weak and they can't take care of themselves. But that may be true in certain areas, and we want to discuss that. And you know, men need to be protected, because Prabhupada said the wife is protection for the man. But we don't always think of, we don't always say men need to be protected. But a married man is protected by his wife. What's he protected from? Well, he's protected from the allurement of other women. He's protected in many ways. As we were joking before, the wife keeps the man humble. He's protected from becoming proud. She'll keep him level-headed. She'll point it out. She'll chop him down to size. So we can say also the woman is protecting the man. But in general, there's this theme, women need to be protected. So then I was thinking, well, in my life, as a husband, what do I protect my wife from? Well, if there's something wrong with a car, I protect her from the mechanic who's going to bamboozle her and say, you need this, you need that, replace this, replace that, this bumping means this and that and that. Of course, we have a nice mechanic, and he wouldn't do that. But that's typical. In fact, there was a study, and they took about 5 different people, different ethnic and gender groups, and sent them to a car dealer to ask for the same car, and each person represented themselves as coming from the same general occupational group and income bracket. So they wanted to see how the car dealers would deal with people. You know, let's say the people came and said, I'm a professional in this line of work. So they all presented themselves as professionals, and they all dressed in similar ways as professional people, and they all indicated their salaries were similar. And each gender group, there was a black, you know, like young, older, male, female, black, white, they all got different quotes on the price of the car. And women got a higher price than the woman coming alone. The 35-year-old woman got a higher price quoted than the 35-year-old man of the same income bracket. So that's an example of when we talk of protection, you have these male predators out there. Not just sexual predators, but they're taking advantage of women's ignorance, because women, you know, they're not car. You know, when I was 16, I had a car. I was putting tailpipes on it, changing the hubcaps, you know, driving down the street, 16, you know, making noises. And that's the male thing. So, you know, girls don't grow up, you know, under the hood like we do, you know. I mean, maybe nowadays they want to get even with men. So,
the hood, but not
so that's a practical example of what a husband does to protect his wife. She protects the wife from predators, sexual predators, financial predators. I mean, as best he can. So when we say husband, the woman needs protection. Well, one of the protections, the way Prabhupada describes it, he said that women by nature can be easily seduced by men. He doesn't go into details, but men can show apparently their affection to women in such a way that women will believe it and then give up their virginity or give them their body for the man to enjoy. Prabhupada makes this point often, that that's just the nature of woman. It's easy, or it's likely, or it's possible that this can happen. And women don't really see that. The man is really not responsible, is not going to be responsible, doesn't really love them, and so forth, and may engage in sexual activity with them, and then, as we often see, leave them. So one of the primary things when Prabhupada talks about protection, when he says she should be protected by the father, she should be protected by the husband and the elder sons, one of the major forms of protection is from sexual predators. Now, I had a friend who grew up in the country of Mauritius, and she told me, I guess this is a, you know, strict Hindu society, conservative Hindu society. She said, when she was growing up, her father, excuse me, would not allow her to wear short sleeve shirts. You know, obviously, no short cholis. Just so that was the father protecting the daughter. And you know, in traditional societies, the parents will help the daughter make a decision. Now, I was in India. I was with a boy, probably 19, and he was the grandson of some devotees. And we were staying at the devotee's home. But he was a musician. I'm a musician, so he wanted to connect with me. So we spent time. And in spending time, I said, take me, I want to see McDonald's in Delhi. This was in 19, I just had to see it. You know, I got actually like, this was 19, probably 97. I go, take me. He said there was this whole square. There was an American restaurant. What's that one? Fridays restaurant?
Thank God it's Friday.
Thank God it's, there's the McDonald's. Thank God it's Friday. There was a cinema. I just had to see it, you know, just like what's going on in India. So on the way, we were talking, and he was talking about his girlfriend. I was like, oh, this kind of, you know, you got a girlfriend. And then, so I said, you're going to get married? He said, oh, no, no, my parents will pick out the girl I'm going to marry. And so it like threw me for a loop. You have a girlfriend you're not going to marry, and your parents are going to pick out the girl you're going to marry. Now, the whole conversation also entailed the fact that he really wanted to be a musician and his parents wanted him to be a doctor, and they were forcing him to be a doctor and go to medical school, and he hated it, and he practically hated them for doing it, but he was doing it, right? But he hated it. But when we came to this discussion of my parents are going to pick out the girl, it was like, for him, it was like, yeah, that's just how it works. It wasn't like a big thing. It's interesting, isn't it? I was like, I didn't say anything. I just said, okay, all right. So I think, you know, ingrained within that culture is the idea of parents protecting both the son and the daughter from sexual predators and creating a solid foundation in their marriage so that the marriage will last and they'll be happy. Because I've been doing a lot of search into research on sexual purity, and one of the things that comes up is this problem when people have been promiscuous before they're married. It becomes a problem in their marriage because they have that samskara, that tendency. And then perhaps their wife or their husband is not going to fulfill them sexually the way they've been fulfilled before, and they're used to having different partners and so on. So it just creates a different standard and can be extremely problematic when they're married. And it can be one of the causes of divorce. So the ideal society maintains the virginity of both the boy and the girl, so the parents are involved in that. There's other people involved. So when we're talking about protection, that's a major form of protection. Then Prabhupada says, if the girl is a virgin, then when she's married, and this will be the first man she has sexual contact with, she'll naturally become attached to that man. I think you require the cultural context in which Prabhupada's discussing it for it to really gel. But he makes that point, and some psychologists have made that point also. So this is a big thing in Vedic culture. So when we say women are less intelligent, one of the things that we're talking about here is the idea that they can be easily exploited by men. Sexually exploited. And we had talked about this before, how the men really, really, really were behind the woman's liberation movement, because the women's were saying, you know, I want to be free from these restraints, so I'm free to be a prostitute. Of course, they didn't think that they were prostitutes, but they, you know, that's the way the men were seeing it. This is great, I don't have to pay for it. I just convince the women that, you know, don't be restricted, and then we get it for free. So can invest that money in better use. And then the Prabhupada said, yeah, why have a cow when you can buy milk in the market? Why bother? You know, so why get married and take all that trouble when you can just, you know, do it with whoever? And there's no obligation. So In one conversation Prabhupada had, I think I explained this before, he had with a reporter, and the reporter was just asking him again and again, what about women? And Prabhupada saying women are dependent and they need to be protected. And of course she was having a hard time dealing with this. And Prabhupada saying, yeah, but if you're not protected, then the man gets you pregnant and then you have to either have an abortion or you need the protection of the government. So you need protection. That's your nature. Once you're pregnant, you can't do it on your own. You have to be protected by the family, by the husband. He's got to go out and make the money so you can stay home. You can't do it on your own. Protection. You need protection. Hello, madam. You need protection. She didn't get it. No, no, we're independent. We don't need this. So Prabhupada said, so if you don't get that, you'll need the protection of the government. Then you go beg charity from the government. You need to be provided financially for. You need to be taken care of. You can't do it on your own. So she didn't get it. She just wouldn't go there. So then after she left, Prabhupada turned to devotees. And he said, therefore I say less intelligent. Because he said, she is going to allow a man to get her pregnant. She's either going to have an abortion or she's going to beg from the government, and she doesn't understand that. Therefore, I say less intelligent. Yes?
Prabhupada said there's two kinds of intelligence, discrimination and memory.
Discrimination women, and memory.
Women
two
excel
kinds of
in memory.
Women excel in memory, and men excel in discrimination?
Apparently.
Sometimes. But I think because it's Kali Yuga, you know, as soon as a guy sees a beautiful girl, his discrimination may... You know, I mean, we read the other week, you weren't here, but we read the other week that 100% of the rapes are committed by men. So, you know, men have this whole other problem world to deal with. But so now we're talking about men protecting women, so then we have to go, well, what kind of men can protect a woman? So a man who has discrimination, a man who is not the predator of that woman. So... Anyway, we're trying to discuss in the context of if women need protection, what do they need protection from or for? How does the man do that? So as Gunagam is saying, generally, in this idea, generally we're talking about a man, a father, a son, or a husband who himself is controlled and disciplined, who can see to the highest good of the wife. And so he's also protecting the wife from himself, so he won't exploit her. He won't see her as an object of sense gratification, as a part of protection. So, who can think of other ways women are protected? Or how a man protects women? Who can think of another example? What are they... How does a man protect a woman? These are... Yeah, physically, yeah. You know, a woman... Alone. How about a woman alone in Central Park at 9 o'clock at night? Is that a good idea?
Not a good idea for a man either.
But a man like Gunagama, they probably wouldn't mess around with, right? But yeah, not a good idea for a man either. But I take a walk in it's about 130-acre preserve. It's a few miles from here. And I'm usually, 99% of the time, I'm usually the only one there. I mean, it's this massive preserve, and you can go out in the forest, and like nobody knows you're there. And my wife goes there sometimes, and I say, "Yeah, it's pretty dangerous." And she said, "Yeah, I never go there when I see another car, and I always bring my phone. And if I see somebody, I walk the other way." Whereas me, as a man, if I see somebody, I don't walk the other way. So that's that. Women often need that form of male protection because generally, when the man's there with the wife, other men aren't going to do anything, either physically or sexually. So. We were having a little joke at our sexual purity seminar, and the men were saying, "Well, how do you deal with women at work that show some signs of attraction to you?" And one of the devotees said, "Talk about your wife. Tell them about your wife." So that's we're saying the men protected by the wife. So the women can do the same. The women are also protected by their husbands because when there is male aggressors, even if it's just subtle. They can talk about their husband. "Oh, I'd like you to meet my husband. I think you'd like him." You know. So, physical protection. Financial protection and the traditional role. We're talking here, a woman is now pregnant. Is it hard for a woman to work when she's pregnant? At a certain point, definitely is hard. Is it hard for a woman to work when she has a small baby? Yes. Is it good for the woman to go back to the workforce with a 3-month-year-old baby? Probably not the best thing. So traditional societies, women were not in the workforce. They were protected financially, they were provided what they needed to take care of the kids. That's another form of protection. So they didn't have to work. So they could do their job as mothers. So is protection a bad thing? Does it belittle the position of the woman? No, we have to look at protection as a facility, and also a facility according to nature. Then we discussed in the article by Urmila that it's a man wanting protection is a sign of weakness, but a woman wanting protection is a sign of her nature. It's a strength. So, you know, a lot of men feel really intimidated with women bossing them around. And it's often very difficult for a woman to be a manager or a leader over men, because men naturally, with their egos, don't want to be told what to do by women. So it's an awkward role, and it's a natural role for a man to be a leader and not to have to put woman in that role. And it creates all kinds of problems. So if a man can take that role and the women don't have to do it, the woman would naturally find it, in a normal situation, would find it easier to just be taken care of and let the man do all the other protection work of taking care of them. They find it easier and natural to be the dependent, because that's their natural psychology. And the man, his natural psychology is to be the protector. And therefore, in Hindi, sometimes the men are called what? The husbands are called what? Pati. The wife will call their husband Pati. Pati means protector. And the husband will call the wife Devi. Goddess. So, Pati, protector. So that's natural. The wife, you know, in a normal situation, the wife will naturally call the husband Pati. She'll feel that. He's the protector. He takes care of me. Another aspect Prabhupada describes is he provides children. So he provides children, he provides food, he provides jewelry, he provides shelter, he provides clothing. And these are all the things that women want. So they're happy to have a man working, providing those things. And that's their shelter and their protection, and it's natural. Now, when society gets disrupted, they may feel they need to compete, and they may feel intimidated, and that they need to show their stuff, and it may be understandable, but it throws the balance off. Or they may have a husband who's not capable of providing those things, who can't protect them, so then they have to step up to the plate, and it creates a problem. So when we're talking about women being protected, we require strong men who can protect them. Otherwise, it doesn't work. So let's see what you guys are saying out there. Uddhava, can we... Okay, we're there. Okay. If saying women are less intelligent because they believe a dishonest, immoral man, can it also be said that men are less intelligent and less moral? Yeah, certainly. That's why this thing becomes clouded. But I think it makes more sense if we see how there's this tendency for men to exploit women, and there's a tendency for women to sometimes mistake it as affection, or to believe a man who is not going to take care of them will. So therefore, traditionally, the whole idea is don't have sex if you're not married, and don't marry a bum. And it solves the whole problem. And how not to marry a bum, let other people help you in your decision. Because that will be a decision that will take into consideration many factors. Of course, if you're very smart, very intelligent, and you've meditated very deeply on the kind of mate that you need and would like and so forth, you may not need other people's help. But traditionally in Vedic society, they had other people involved because other people could see the natures of the individuals, astrologically and other ways. And Prabhupada said, if their natures weren't close, the marriage wasn't going to be good. And if you had like this totally brahminical man and a shudra nature woman, it wasn't going to work. Or a shudra nature man and a brahminical woman. He said, any time the woman was of a higher caste or nature than the man, it never worked. He said, the more they had in common, the more it would work. So That is one way I see it's a form of protection that the parents would give to their daughter or to their son to help them in their choice or choose for them. Now you look at it today and go, well, that doesn't work. But the alternatives don't work. generally. Well, we have a 50% divorce rate or whatever, so the alternatives are not so hot either. So people are making passionate decisions because they don't understand the dharma of household life. So everything's based around sex. Sexual attraction. Do I like the way she looks? Do I like the way she talks and walks? That's like predominantly important. So in the Vedic concept, marriage is not about sense gratification. Marriage is about elevation. So you make other considerations about who your wife is. It's not just, I like the way she looks. And for many men, that may become secondary or not even that important. But our society is so sex-crazed, it's so important, that that can overshadow. It's like a man looking at a sports car that looks like a Ferrari with an engine that's about to blow up. So he's just attracted to the body, but he doesn't even care. He doesn't even look at the engine, and he puts his money out for the car, and then he finds out, oh, that's not a good engine. So, well, you should have found that out before you bought the car. But he's so enamored by the car, he didn't look at the engine. So, you know, men are enamored by women's physical features. And they can be very unintelligent, and they can act in very stupid ways in the presence of women. And you see in the Bhagavatam, like Urvasi will come and say, hey, you're stupid. Don't you know women are like this? Why are you getting so bewildered by us? Why are you trusting us so much? You know, you should be more careful. So the idea is, and Prabhupada writes about this, he said, and Prabhupada's talking, I think when Prabhupada's making these points, he's really talking about women in general. When Prabhupada talks about social issues, he's really talking about society in general. And unless he specifically mentions devotees, he's not really talking about devotees. So Prabhupada's talking about these global statements, women are like this, men are like this. But one point Prabhupada makes about women is that women have a tendency to be in the modes of passion and ignorance, that they're very concerned about how they look. They're very concerned about family, home. They're attached to clothing. It's just things which are more physical, bodily attachments are stronger. Now you could say, well, I know devotee men who seem more attached than devotee women. It's true. Prabhupada's talking general principle. And it's Kali Yuga. General things get mixed up. But it relates to protection. So in the ideal scenario, this is what Prabhupada says, and we can only say it's ideal. He said, the man generally is more in the mode of goodness. Then you say, well, look at Kali Yuga, all these men are in the mode of passion. Generally, yeah, but they have some level of discrimination and intelligence in a way which women generally don't have. So therefore, Prabhupada says, the man will elevate the woman from whose inclination tends to be towards passionate ignorance. He'll help control that so she won't go overboard and just get consumed in material life and forget, you know, her higher nature. Now, then you read things that Prabhupada said. Generally, at spiritual functions, you don't see many men. You see many women. And you go, well, how does this, like, make sense? So it's like we're trying to put it all together. But generally, the idea of man having discrimination and being a little more detached, as the man who was trained as a brahmachari and comes in the guru position. Now that makes more sense in the Krishna conscious movement. But still, as we've said many times before, you'll find scenarios where things are topsy-turvy, where the man is actually weaker. He's not very smart, he's more attached, and so forth. So we're making broad generalizations here. Now, another thing that Prabhupada said, women devotees, their brain grows 64 ounces. You know, he would joke about this. He said when they become devotees, they become the most intelligent. So, you know, you look at the issue and it gets confusing, but then you want to look at some more of the natural ways in which men would protect women. As I said last week or the week before, in the military, when men and women were in combat together, the men couldn't fight because they were overly protective of the women. As soon as anything happened to a woman, they would just stop. Whereas if it happened to another fellow man, they could deal with it more easily because guys are tougher anyway. And so their natural instinct to protect a woman was so strong it was disrupting their ability to fight. And they couldn't have men and women fighting together. They had to fight separately. So that just shows it's like natural for men to want to protect women. And it's natural for women to want to be protected. Okay, let's read what you're saying. Josh Josh is asking, any advice on how to begin and sustain Krishna consciousness when unable to attend a temple? I've chanted off and on for a long time, but would like to begin sadhana. That's a question you should email to krishna.com. How does he do that? Got an email address for him? We're going to give you, because we want to deal with questions on the topic, and that question you can, they have live chat on krishna.com? No? You can just go to krishna.com, click live chat between hours of 9 and 5, or what?
Anytime.
Anytime, 24/7.
If it's not a live chat, you can send an email.
If it's not a live chat, you can send email. You just go on krishna.com. Can it also be said that men are less honest and less moral? I guess if the men are less honest and less moral, that would make them less intelligent, KC-wise. Ganagami, what's your answer? Can it be said men are less honest, less moral, and therefore less intelligent?
That's not the description we get in Shastra.
Ganagami says, that's not the description we get in Shastra, but Bhakti and Carol would reply, I'll reply for you, but that's what we see with our eyes, men doing stupid things.
I think it depends on which sex you are, what you see.
I saw this comedian, and she had a little like golf ball in her hand, and she had this big ball in her right hand, and she had, now this is the size of men's brain and this is the size of woman's brain. So from the woman point of view, they'll see all the stupid things men do, and they go, these guys are dumb, and we're sharp and we're smart. And so I think the point is, women are very sharp and smart in certain areas. In general, men are very sharp and smart in other areas, and there's a lot of dumb men out there, and there's a lot of smart women out there. And so my, you know, aside from answering this question philosophically, when it really comes push to shove, what I do is I acknowledge the differences between men and women. There are obvious differences, and Bhakti and Carol, you know what they are if you've ever hung around men. You know what the differences are. I acknowledge the differences of men and women and how they operate emotionally and how their intelligences work. And I also acknowledge the women I'm dealing with based on what I see in terms of their capabilities and qualities. And I would never deny that I'm seeing what I'm seeing. If I see intelligence, I'm not going to deny that it's not intelligence. We have discussed also that these things also revolve around social interaction, because the real thing when we're talking about men and women, the real essence is how do they socially interact in such a way that we can preserve chastity. And so sometimes you could say, this woman would be a better CEO at the bank and she would be more honest and so on, but really her role is best served as to be the mother of these five kids. And that will be the best thing for everybody. So sometimes those are the considerations that are really fundamental. And in my study of all of these issues, it always comes down to this point of household life being the staple of society, and how important it is that men and women get together and are chaste to one another. And really, a lot of times when you look at Prabhupada's instructions, the bottom line instruction is always, what helps you become Krishna conscious? Do that. That's what's important. Not following this particular rule or regulation to the T if it doesn't exactly fit the particular situation. And so what I see is that the most important thing that I've learned from my studies in the world of sexual purity is that men have to learn to control themselves sexually. Women have to learn how to be chaste to one man. Men have to learn how to be responsible. Women need to be compatible and kind and puff up their husband's egos because that's what they want. And they need in some way to establish stability, because that is essentially important for both the functioning of society and more important for our spiritual growth. Because the better your relationship with your wife, the more stable your family life is, the easier it's going to be for you to be Krishna conscious. Now, Prabhupada talks about this and he says we need to be peaceful to be Krishna conscious. Lord Balaram talks about it in the Krishna book. He said you have to be peaceful. And sometimes we put down this idea of peace and say we're not after peace, we're not after shanti, we are desireless. But the point Prabhupada's making of being peaceful is you have to be situated in varna and ashram so your mind's not completely agitated by the opposite sex. Your mind's not completely agitated by things of this world. So then from that platform, you can build your spiritual life on it. Because if you're not properly situated, your spiritual life will suffer. There's not a, you don't have the proper foundation. So we talk about, like we talk about, we have a Grihastha division team, and we talk about improving our marriages. The ultimate reason we want to improve our marriages is not just so we can say, oh, I'm so much happier now that my wife and I get along. That you want to be happy, but the reason you want to be happy is not for happiness's sake in and of itself. It's because you want to have a peaceful situation within the Grihastha ashram so that you can be peaceful to do Krishna consciousness. Because if you're not, if that ashram is disrupted, your Krishna consciousness is going to suffer. Just as if you're a sannyasi and you're totally distracted by the opposite sex, it's disrupting. And you're going to be thwarted in your spiritual progress. If you're a vanaprastha and now you're looking back and thinking, oh, maybe I should get married again. Maybe I should start a new business. You know, it doesn't work. If you're a brahmachari, you got to be a brahmachari. Not that you're going out and, picking up Victoria's Secret swimsuit edition, and checking it out, and in the bathroom and locking yourself up. And so any ashram can be disturbed by not following it through. And so this sexual thing it's a really big thing in Krishna consciousness, how we deal with it. I mean, Prabhupada said 50% of your advancement in Krishna consciousness is dependent on how you control your sex life. And every ashram is dealing with sexual control. Every single one. So you figure out which ashram you want to be in, which will work best for you, and then you work on sexual control. Because that's 50% of it right there. So Grihastha ashram is just an ashram, as are other ashrams, and it's an ashram to help you deal with this sexual thing, ultimately to get control of it. Somehow or other. However it is that you do it. That's ultimately what it's there for. And most men need it because they can't be celibate all their life. And they need to express their sexual desire in some way, and therefore there's marriage. Otherwise, how do they express it? They get virgin girls pregnant, or they go visit prostitutes. We don't want that. We want to keep it in the family. Keep it where, if anything happens, the wife gets pregnant, the husband's there, and there's going to be a father to take care of him. There's going to be money. There's going to be a home. And, of course, more ideal is plan it and be in higher consciousness and attract a higher soul. And so, and you study this issue, then what Prabhupada says is, he says, society, the advancement of society depends on bringing in a higher consciousness of human beings into this world. And he said all the problems now in modern society are because we're bringing in, because we're not following samskaras, we're bringing in a lower class of people. And these people create all kinds of problems. And then these people, and Prabhupada said, and these people are attracted to sinful activity, and they become degraded by the sinful activity, and they're not really qualified to be parents according to the standard of Bhagavatam, and then they raise people who are in many ways less than really human. And Prabhupada said that. Because in Vedic society, you're either in one of the four varnas, and if you're not one of four ashrams, then you're considered an outcast, and it basically means you're less than human. And then Prabhupada said, ultimate goal is to come to the brahminical platform, because that's the highest stage, Satvagun. So to be human is actually quite a compliment, because it means to be tolerant, not to be envious, not to be angry, to protect elders and do so many things that even average people, which we consider moral, don't always do. But let me get back to your comments. Okay. Bhakti and Carol says, this keeps bugging me. General population men are not always the woman's well-wisher. Do you mean want protection only from devotee men, or in general population? No, well, what I mean is, that's their general psychology, but because the men aren't doing it, it throws the women off. And they're like, okay, women's liberation. I don't want these guys around. They just mess my life up. They're bums. They don't take care. I was with this guy, and he had three other girlfriends on the side. Recently, the golfer was found out, having all kinds of affairs. What's his name? The golfer?
Tiger Woods.
So they interviewed one of his mistresses, and she was having this long-time affair. And she was having all these financial problems, and he wouldn't give her any money. So women go through these experiences, you know, what's up with these guys, you know? Well, you know, hello, you're his mistress, you know, so, you know, what does that say?
Like,
you know,
what do you expect? She had a really nice car. I saw that.
She did have a nice, well, I guess she wanted she only had a Porsche and she wanted a Ferrari or something, I don't know. But the point is, the way men often act gives women the impression that they can't protect me, and why would I want to be foolish enough to put myself in a situation where I think I put myself at his mercy and then he can't do anything. So, you know, when Prabhupada's talking about this, he's talking general propensity, more ideal situations. And I think society in the last 40 years has really, a lot of what Prabhupada has said was written in the 50s, and society has changed a lot since then. I grew up in the 50s. There was only one person in our neighborhood that got divorced. One person. Of all my friends, only one. And they were the youngest family in the neighborhood. So, you know, Prabhupada's writing this when things were a little more normal. In the 50s, generally women didn't work. One man worked, and he made enough money to buy a house, to buy two cars, to have a four-week vacation. Then he was just working in some factory. That's what America was like then. And, you know, my father, he took care of us. He was always there for my mother. You know, I don't think my mother had any issues with a man protecting her. He was always there. And I think in that era, that was, you know, that's how women were. And in that era, you know, you'll see with your parents now or your grandparents, you know, they've been together for 40, 50 years, and that's the different generation. So, you know, everything's so messed up now. But I think if you put a man in the ideal situation and put woman in the ideal situation, then you say women would naturally want to be protected by a strong man. Or, and Prabhupada's point is, even if they don't want it because of the social situation, they need it. Of course, society is adjusting itself now, so much education and opportunity is there for women so they could support themselves. So in that sense, you could say they don't need it, but quote, in a quote-unquote normal situation, they would probably prefer to not have to do that. Maybe some of them, or majority of them. Am I saying it's bad to do that? No, not necessarily. I'm saying whatever works, because ultimately we want what's going to work for you in your relationship with your partner, your husband, or if you want to be single, you know, whatever works. That was always ultimately Prabhupada's attitude. So let's hear, let's see. So when women are quiet and stay home and depend only on men financially, and women go without education, they don't have rights politically. Yeah, well, that's part of the... It seems that... I'm not an historian, but it seems like in a society, in societies where you know, it seems like you come from this Vedic paradigm where women were taken care of, you had these pious kings, and then you get off, but you still have the kings still have the power, and then the exploitation begins. And then the women become second, third, fourth, fifth class citizens that are taken advantage of, and so forth. And then you have the fall of the ideal, and then everything's topsy turvy. So I think we're dealing with that also. And I think you also have to deal with the fact that if a woman's Krishna conscious, she can be satisfied in any situation, so she could more easily accept her role and not be really looking at men in terms of, well, these guys are exploiting and so forth. But if she can be happy within her role and happy within her service, then these will become less of an issue. Now, they may become issues for her if she sees that female devotees are being prevented from doing services that they can do, that they can do well, that would be helpful, that would be good for them. You know, or if that's happening to you, then naturally there may be some concern. But the Hare Krishna movement exists within a culture and it's influenced by that culture. So we as male devotees are also influenced by our culture. As I said many times before, in the civil rights movement, the movement that was working to free black Africans from oppression. In that very movement, the women in the civil rights movement were second-class citizens. So it's so pervasive that even the civil rights movement was discriminating against women, because that was how society was structured in the 60s. Isn't that interesting? And then ISKCON is born of the 60s, and we come out of that culture, and we interpret Vedic paradigms in a particular way, and then women may end up as somewhat second-class citizens in ISKCON, and now we have to deal with that. And it may not be global. It may be just in the minds of some men or some leaders, or it may not be in the minds of other men. And, you know, there's so many ways to understand it. But I think for us, the best thing is to understand the principle, because this principle keeps coming up. Prabhupada keeps saying women need to be protected. What does he mean by that? Yes, Ganagamya.
There was a big feminist who went to India, and she was going to straighten everything out. And I don't know her name. When she got there, she found that women had their own society. And the Vedic system is that the women have their society, the men have their society. They come together for mating, raising the family, and that's essentially it. You know, they don't work together all the day, and they have their own friendships and support groups within their sex. So this is
so they weren't competing with the men.
Far cry from what we have today, where everybody is commingled, co-educated, and so forth. And therefore, people are looking for support and appreciation from the opposite sex that they're not going to get. They're going to have friends. One book I read was really great. This guy about what really works with men. And he said, men are gorillas. You can't have a relationship with them. Have a relationship with your friends. And don't worry about it.
Did you guys hear? If you didn't hear that, let me know. Men are gorillas?
Men are gorillas. You can't have a relationship with a 500-pound gorilla.
You can't have a relationship with a 500-pound gorilla. So, wives, what should you do with your husbands? Lock them up in a cage? And just throw the food in there. Yeah, the women are like, these guys are so bad with relationships. Like, what's wrong with them? No, but guys can learn. The gorillas can be trained.
Good luck.
No, I'm working on it.
I know you're working on yourself. I'm working on it.
My wife's got great hope for me. My wife's got hope for me. I've been doing much better in the last year. I've improved a lot. The gorilla has improved. You know, Bhakti and Carol, I think it's like this letter we were initially reading when Ramapant Swami was answering the question of why in the Bhagavatam does it say the males were with their female consorts and it put the females in a secondary position. You know, she was looking at it from the point of view, what's going on in our society? And I think that the Bhagavatam is not actually looking at it that way. And as Ganagamya is saying, is the women had their own societies and they were not at odds with the men, and their expectations of what the men could and couldn't do were different. And, you know, Prabhupada always talks about how in Vedic culture, the men were, you know, they were these very strong figures who really respected the woman as mother and really took care of her. And, you know, they wanted a family, and the woman obviously was essential in bearing the children and raising good children and keeping the home proper and peaceful. So they understood that. And in our culture, men tend to understand that less and understand the woman more as the slave, sexual slave, and the maid in the house, and so forth. And so therefore, then we get these reactions. Well, what about these men? They're like this and that, and, you know, they're just trying to keep me down, and so forth. And you'll find also in Vedic culture, women learned 64 arts. All these incredible arts, you know. But they were arts that were useful within the home because they were not going into the workforce, so they didn't need to get the big education to go out there to earn the bucks. But they learned all these other arts that just made home life more interesting.
And were much more interesting to the women.
And more interesting to the women, and then didn't have this whole social pressure to compete with the men and be like a man. And then when you do that, then women have to take on male qualities. The women, put women in the workforce, on the sales force, and they'll have to become a little bit gorilla-like and tiger-like to do the sales. And it's not generally their nature, but you know their nature is to be more motherly. So I think that can mess things up also, more than they're already messed up. So power control, financial control, so yeah, all these things. So the point is, don't marry a man who's like that. And if women were smart enough not to marry men like that, all those men would start to realize that they better change or they won't get a wife. Now, there's a book by Dr. Lauren, and that book is entitled Ten Stupid Things Women Do to Mess Up Their Lives. And it relates to what Prabhupada is saying, is how women are easily seduced by men, and therefore they need protection. And that whole book just outlines ways in which women do stupid things in relation to men, in relation to relationships with men, and points them out one by one. And it's such a good book for women to read, because women can very easily get attached to men who they shouldn't get attached to, men who are going to do things that are not going to be in their best interest. So she helps women decipher who are these men who are going to be the ones who really they should be serious about, and what are the red flags for the other men. Now, I heard another show about this, and one man said, the way I train my daughter, the way I brought up my daughter is this. I said, I would tell her that any relationship you have with a boy should only be in consideration, is that boy qualified to be your husband? If in any way you don't see the potential, even if it doesn't work out, but you don't see the potential of that person being your husband, you should have no in any way romantic relationship, nothing more than just a distant friendship. And I thought, well, that's a very good principle, because then you're being trained to see, number one, you're going to be celibate, because there's no question of having sex with some guy who's not going to be your husband. And if you take it further, if you really think this guy's going to be your husband and you've waited that long to make the choice, you can wait a little bit longer and get married. So it's a very good meditation. Same thing for a man. Don't have a relationship with any girl unless you see that girl as a potential wife. And that's very sobering. And then, so when a man's physically attracted to a girl, then he can think, but would she be a proper wife? And he can look and say, no, her nature is different than mine. So even though I'm attracted, I'm not going to go around with her. I don't want to. It's not proper. So in Vedic culture, you're protected from doing that. But in our culture, you have to make those decisions yourself. So Bhakti and Carol's now, she's making a list of all the terrible things men do. They can hold down women. They can make women victims. They can abuse them. Uneducated. Keep control. Financial control. Hari Bol Amanda. Amanda's with us. And keep money away from someone. It's part of the formula for the one to control. Yeah. So many divorces are dealing with money. What about if the wife is more educated than her husband and makes more money than her husband? Like the wife's a doctor. That's why the Veda says a woman should not marry a person lower than her. It's going to be problematic. Then you can tell your husband, you got to listen to me because I pay the bills. And go tell him to change the diapers. And you can do whatever you want if you make more money than your husband. He's at your mercy now. So here's it's just an example of a role reversal. And sometimes they may have to be role reversals, because that may be the only thing that's going to work well. If you're more highly qualified than your husband, maybe. And of course, he has to understand that and accept it. I think that's the whole point, you know. It's like, does that work for you? If it works for you, fine. If your husband's okay with that. If he goes, oh, my wife's so much smarter than me. She's making so much more money than me. She knows how to invest the money. You know, she knows how to spend properly, manage the finances. I just let her do it all. I'm not good at that. I just do what I just go to my job and that's it. If he's fine with that, great. Then do it. It's only a problem in doing that if you just don't want to do it and it's really upsetting to you and you really feel he should be doing it. But he may not be able to. So I think we have to deal with these realities. and work out what's best. And, you know, I mean, I know some devotees would argue, no, the husband should always be on top, but the whole idea is if he's on top, he's got to be able to lead. And if he can't lead, then do what you have to do. I think in most marriages today, in ISKCON, especially with the younger devotees, the husband is not on top and the wife is not on top. Everything is just mutual decision-making. And for most couples, that's, you know, they'll realize the man is smarter or more intuitive in certain areas. The woman is smarter, more intuitive in other areas. And so they will tend to defer to those areas to allow that particular spouse to make the decisions in those areas, or at least to seriously consider what they're saying, because you respect that my wife or my husband is really, you know, he's in touch with these areas. He knows what he's talking about.
Prabhupada said once, no man in India would ever make a decision, a serious decision, without consulting his wife, especially about money.
Oh, nice. Ganagami said, Prabhupada said, no man in India would make a serious decision, especially about money, without consulting his wife. Okay, ladies, write that down. Find that quote. So Bhakti and Carol is saying, about less dishonest, less moral, referring to the example of a man lying to a woman to get sexual relations from her, woman being less intelligent for believing the man. Then wouldn't the men be less intelligent, less moral? Yeah, it's all a big mess. It's all a mess. And I'll tell you another story, that any time there was any form of illicit connection going on, when we're talking about illicit sex here, I mean sex outside of marriage, a married man having sex with a woman who's either married or not married, any time that would go on, Prabhupada would always say it's the man's fault, it's not the woman's. He said, because the woman, they're easily, I don't know the words he would use, but he'd say something along the lines of women are easily seduced by men. But he said the men are supposed to be intelligent, so they shouldn't have done this. The men know better. It was like basically Prabhupada saying, the men know better, the women, you know, they're weaker. So they tend to give in more easily. So he always blamed the man, he never blamed the woman. So in that sense, what you're saying is right, that you can blame the men for anything the man does that is not in line with protecting a woman. And you can blame him, and then you can say he's less moral, he's less honest, he's less intelligent, and you can call him names if you want. So I agree. So now we're late. And I didn't even read my paper, which is called Women Protected or Independent. What is protection? Why do they need protection? We're going to read more next week. Got a whole paper on this. And we'll see if we can go deeper. So thank you. I hope all the women are satisfied that we really got on the case of the men today. They deserve it. And you don't often hear this talk in ISKCON, do you? It's always like, well, the women this, the women that, and now we're talking about the men. Yeah, and we had talked about the men being chaste husbands. You don't hear that either. Chaste husbands. And I think we talked about something also today about men being less intelligent. So, yeah, ladies, we're getting back at these guys. They deserve it, right? So on that happy note, you can like, yeah. Of course, I know it's not your nature to get, you have that soft heart that you don't really want to get back at the men for their atrocious behavior towards you. Because you're not like men, so you won't scoop as low as them. Right? I know that. So thank you, and we will see you next week, and Hare Krishna to you, and have a good week, and till then, Hare Krishna. Gauranga, Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nitanya.